Since iTunes only keeps the last 100 episodes of any show, some of our show topics that seem to help the most people are no longer available when people search on iTunes. So, in an effort to make that information available to more people, from time to time we're going to re-air some of our most popular show topics. You can also go to kickitnaturally.com and search for any topic in our search box. For now, enjoy this show that originally aired in 2014.
T.C. Hill is not a doctor and does not claim to be a doctor licensed in any type of medical field. Don't be an idiot and use anything heard on the show as medical advice. This information should be used for educational purposes only, and you should contact your doctor for any medical advice. Now get off me. Welcome to Kick It Naturally. I'm Kenna McEnroe, and I'm here with T.C. Hale, author, natural health expert, producer, and electrician sometimes.
Electrician?
Yeah.
I know electric stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I know where the batteries go, and like, I used to have a ColecoVision, and I had a remote control, and we'll talk about that later.
Okay. That was really interesting. Mm-hmm. And we also have Will Schmidt, fitness trainer to the stars, hottie patati, blah, 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 blah. How are you, Will?
Good.
Looking dapper today.
Thanks. In my sweatpants.
Uh-huh. So today we've got a great topic. Today we're going to be talking about food allergies and sensitivities that you might have. I think everybody's heard about all this, you know, yeah, I'm gluten-free, I'm this, I'm that.
Right.
So we're going to be talking about all that.
Yeah, it's a big topic. And, you know, we say food allergies and food sensitivities because people use the words interchangeably. But most of what we'll be talking about today is more towards the food sensitivities topic.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So if you haven't already liked us on Facebook, time to pull over and get your phone out or your iPad and like us at Kick It in the Nuts. And we're going to post topics there every week on all our future shows. And you guys can post any questions you want us to cover on the show. And we'll do our best to do it.
We'll say things about the questions. Yeah. We've been getting good ones lately.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Sometimes they stump us.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, they always stump me.
We'll get one today
where
we'll be like, I don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll get to that one.
So food allergies, food sensitivities, what's up? What's going
on? So well, before we get into really anything, I want to say that when we're talking about food sensitivities and most of the things that we talk about today about how they come about and what's going on, we're not talking about serious things like a peanut allergy. If somebody has a peanut allergy, they have to really watch out for that, or they anaphylactic shock, and they can die, and all kinds of bad stuff. So, you know, you hear a lot about airlines getting rid of peanuts and run from peanuts, everybody, and there's reasons, you know, that can be serious for somebody dealing with that.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not going to get into a whole lot of that. That's a whole different situation, and is usually available to them at birth or at a very young age. And there's some theories. I think somebody has some questions about it, so we'll talk about it then. But most of the stuff we're going to talk about will be food sensitivity kind of stuff. You okay with that, Will?
Yeah, I'm cool with that.
All right.
Are you sensitive about it?
No. Okay. Bee stings, though, are probably in that same category. And not at all food. Yeah. You know, I think it'll be a lot more useful to talk about the food sensitivity realm because there's a lot more you can do about that.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Okay. Yeah, I like that.
All right.
We're going to come back to the bee thing. I have an interesting thing. This is not fact, but I have an interesting story. It's not about a ColecoVision or anything.
You know, one time I was hiking and a bee stung me up underneath my fingernail.
Ugh,
and you talk about the worst pain ever, and the stinger was like stuck in there. It was really, really painful.
That is not a good happy story at all.
No, it didn't have a happy ending.
So let's explain a little bit about how food sensitivities come about and why it's so popular now. What happens is, let's say that you eat a peanut butter sandwich. You're not a peanut allergic type person. You're just a person. So you eat a peanut butter sandwich. Mm-hmm. And what happens is that sandwich, when it goes through the digestive process, which means that your stomach creates acid to break it down, and then as it moves through the duodenum, the bile comes in and neutralizes that acid, and there's this sizzle, and everything explodes and breaks apart. So when you do that, that peanut butter sandwich is broken down into amino acids, vitamins, fats, all the things that your body can use. So once it's exploded like that, it no longer has an identity of a peanut butter sandwich. Now, as it moves through the system, it's just amino acids, vitamins, minerals, fats. It's just all the building blocks that your body needs.
That's magic.
It is. It is like, it is magic. Mm. I wish I knew more magic, because I think girls like that, right?
Yeah, girls so well.
I think it's a little cheesy.
I don't know. It can be cheesy. Right.
But it seems like everybody that's a magician really thinks that girls like that.
Yeah.
They didn't get the memo.
They like Tuscan leather, I hear.
Okay. All right. They may be misguided. Yeah. I just wanted to make sure that I was okay with not doing magic. Mm. But let's say that that doesn't happen. Say that there's digestive issues and the food does not get broken down properly. Now it's moving through your system as a peanut butter sandwich. But a peanut butter sandwich does not belong in the bloodstream. Or,
it would be like putting a peanut butter sandwich in a car, right? I mean, it doesn't belong there either.
It doesn't belong. Why would a peanut butter sandwich not belong in a car?
Yeah. It's like in the gas tank.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
not in the car.
I was going to say, I've been in a car with a peanut butter sandwich before. Okay.
I forgot about a peanut butter sandwich.
I did have my seatbelt on. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not crazy.
Right.
I'm not going to be in a car with a peanut butter sandwich without my seatbelt on.
I'm going to put the seatbelt on the peanut butter sandwich because I don't want anything happening to that. That's my precious baby.
Delicious. So if it moves through the intestinal tract and it never got broken down properly and parts of it start seeping into the bloodstream, now instead of nutrients going into the bloodstream, you have a peanut butter sandwich. And the body doesn't know what peanut butter sandwich is down in there. It just knows vitamins, amino acids, minerals, fats. Proteins. So
that's why when you go poo, you don't see it.
You're not supposed to see it.
Yeah, if you saw a whole peanut butter sandwich in there, that's bad news.
Right, and that's going to be a painful bowel movement.
You either need to chew or do something with your digestion.
Right. That reminds me, like, I was such a picky eater when I was a kid that the only thing I would eat was peanut butter and jelly on white bread, and it had to be cut into squares. Like, if my mom cut it into triangles, it was going back to the kitchen.
Crust all over.
Try again. God. Yeah. I was okay with the crust, but it had to be squares.
Gotcha.
Anyways, so now this peanut butter sandwich has entered the bloodstream, and the body's freaking out because it doesn't belong there. So it views it as an invader, and it attacks this peanut butter sandwich. So next time you have a peanut butter sandwich and that happens again, your body has already made these antibodies to this invader, I'm doing quotes on radio, that has come into the body. So every time you eat this food now, there's this horrible reaction. And it should be a horrible reaction because your body just went to war with a peanut butter sandwich.
Mm. Yeah, it brings to mind, like, one of our teachers gave this really useful definition of a toxin.
Gandhi?
No. His name shall remain nameless. But a toxin can be understood as anything that your body can't overcome or utilize. So when you look at it that way, like, any given food could be a toxin if, like, you don't have the right digestive juices or digestive environment to break it down. So that's where we see a lot of the food sensitivities that people feel like they have come from just their inadequate digestion. It's not like a genetic thing necessarily. It's just if they fix that, then all of a sudden those foods become resources rather than toxins.
Right. So, different foods can affect different people with that inability to digest it. It kind of brings us to, you may have heard of this blood type diet. And it's out there, and I used to teach it to my clients years ago before I knew more stuff. But basically, do you want to explain how the lectin situation works?
Yeah, lectins are essentially like any molecule that has like a sugar, like glucose, and a protein together. And grains are particularly like high in lectins, but there's, for each blood type, there's particular lectin allergies. The short list of like 5 to 7 different foods that you'll find each type particularly sensitive to. But for a lot of people, they can still eat those foods. Sometimes it's like some of their favorite foods because their digestion is working okay. And if the flora is in place to create the right mucus lining and such inside the intestinal tract, then when they eat those lectins, the flora protects it and the mucus protects the bloodstream from those lectins getting in there and damaging things. So a lot of times people don't experience their lectin allergies, even though their blood type says, oh, you could be sensitive to this.
Right.
And that's thanks to a healthy gut flora.
Right. And so it's kind of like to look at it in a very simple way. the lectin is just the food still having its own identity. It was not broken down into elemental parts that your body can use. It still is a peanut butter sandwich. So the blood type diet can actually be effective for some people. If, let's say that my blood type doesn't do well with onions. If my digestion is not working well and I eat onions, now I can develop that sensitivity to onions because my body is attacking onions every time it comes in my body. But if my digestion was working correctly, it wouldn't matter because it would be broken down to the elemental parts. So then that blood type diet becomes obsolete if your digestion is working properly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just another quick note with like a lot of the people that come in to work with us about what they should eat, they've come to us with like this whole preconceived notion about the significance of the blood type diet. Mm-hmm. And we tend to just look at what are some of the known lectin allergies to that type, and to also know it's not that big a deal if digestion's working well. So that can help people know what foods might be good to avoid while they're working on fixing their digestion. But as far as the whole paradigm of the blood type diet, there's a lot of other factors that we like to look at to help determine what a person should eat.
Name 17 of those factors.
Like 17 of those factors. Like their blood pressure's low, if their blood pressure's high, their breath rate's high, their breath rate's low.
Ooh, he gets a gold star.
I keep going.
Yeah, so it also kind of helps explain the whole confusion about food allergies. Like, why am I allergic to this food, but my sister eats that food all the time and she's fine? Mm. So if the blood type diet is accurate in saying that this particular blood type can be sensitive to these foods, then that makes sense how if two people, both of their digestions are crap, but they are sensitive to different foods. Mm-hmm. That could be about their blood type. But the real thing is you have to really look at the person, because if digestion is working correctly, then they're not going to have a problem with those foods.
Yeah. That brings me to look at like the other issues of their digestion is working decently well, and you can look at what are their major imbalances that they're trying to correct, whether they're a slow oxidizer, fast oxidizer, or too anabolic or too catabolic. A lot of those distinctions that we clarify more in our course, like our digestive issues course at kickinthenuts.com, those can also give a lot of indication as to what foods are going to work better or worse for one person to the next. So I'm sure we'll talk more about that throughout the podcast.
Right, because a lot of people view, well, I eat this food and afterwards I feel lousy, or I have no energy and I want to pass out. And they kind of view that as I must have a food sensitivity or an allergy to that food. But sometimes it can be a situation where you don't have the ability to oxidize that food because it's a food that's harder to oxidize. Mm-hmm. So that can be a factor too. And when Will's talking about looking at whether you're too anabolic or a slow or fast oxidizer, in our 4-week free course or in any of my books, we teach people, if you're a first-time listener, we teach people how to look at their own blood pressure and simple tests you can run at home and kind of get an idea of how your body's operating. And then you can actually look at why you're dealing with the problems instead of just, you know, what's good for this symptom kind of thing. So we're looking at individuality.
Yeah, and growing in that knowledge helped me actually totally replace my approach with my clients and their diet, where I used to use this service that did really comprehensive food sensitivity testing, where they could see like everything that you're like severely sensitive to or moderately sensitive to, and they would put you on these allergy elimination diets with these really complicated, like long cycles of trying to reintroduce and guess and check of like, you know, what triggers you. But once you know where your base chemistry should be and how it's imbalanced and how foods affect those points of balance in the body, then you realize it's not the particular food necessarily that there's an allergy to. It's where is your chemistry at and how is that food affecting your chemistry? And the closer you can get your body to balanced in all those key points of homeostasis we talk about, the less you're going to have food sensitivities in general, and the more foods will just work well for you.
So when you go to the allergy doctor and he does all those little scratches on your back and, you know, they turn red and all that, that is basically, you can fix that with your digestion, a lot of those things, or?
A lot of those things. It's not going to be automatic for everybody. And also, some of those things can take longer for some people depending on what else is going on in their body. It can depend on if their intestinal lining has been compromised and now has holes and stuff like that. So it's not a cut and dry thing, but if you do have food sensitivities now, it is possible to see improvement after you have fixed digestion.
I'd love to be able to roll in grass again someday.
All the cool kids roll around in grass. Yeah,
I'm really allergic to grass.
We do a lot of snow angels here in California.
Cool.
So we just do it in the grass instead, I guess.
All right.
Maybe we'll answer some questions, but then we'll talk about some of this other stuff as we do that too.
All right. So let's start. Oh, I had the first question. It's pretty funny. Kenna, my food can be very sensitive. Sometimes it cries for no reason at all.
I think you're confused about the topic.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. That was silly.
Unless if she's a cannibal.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Janie, I just got that. Yes, my victim start crying. Janie from Danville, California. I used to love peppers and ate them all the time. Now I start to itch anytime I have them. What is that?
So that can, you know, when we talk about when digestion is not working well and you eat a food and now your body's attacking it every time you eat it from now on. So that can be the situation that's going on. But, you know, why does it happen with one food and not another? We talked about that a little bit, but it can also depend on why, you know, is your digestion staying off or was it worse at one point? When I was first lost my voice and was doing all the doctor stuff and they had me on all the reflux PPI drugs, and I had no digestion. I found that there was only a few things that I could eat if I didn't feel lousy afterwards. But then after I learned what was going on and I fixed my digestion, it still took me a while before I could eat a lot of those foods. Like, they still bothered me just because that antibody had been created. So for some things I had to not eat nuts for like a year, and then all of a sudden I could eat them again and it wouldn't be such a bad thing. So it can depend on what's going on with your digestion and whether you're on like reflux meds and stuff like that. Don't you think, Kenna?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. I had a couple of things I was going to comment on and I just didn't do it. I'm practicing restraint.
You're so good.
Okay, Christopher, how vital are labs in managing food allergy sensitivities? Which labs do you recommend for testing?
I think that we should have Kenna read to the class for a minute. This is from my book, Kick Your Fat in the Nuts.
Let's see. Food allergies are a very hot topic these days, and people come to me all the time and tell me about the testing they had done for food allergies. They tell me their tests showed they are allergic to nuts, dairy, wheat, gluten, soy, pork, turkey jerky, the board game Parcheesi, and Lou Diamond Phillips. Well, at what point does this person have to leave Earth in order to eat lunch? He's been told that he's allergic to just about everything on the planet. If you get to the point where you can only eat things that resemble Al Roker, it might be time to understand food allergies. Nicely put, Tony.
Sure. And so that kind of explains the frustration that people deal with when they do these testings and they show, I'm allergic to 74 things.
Mm-hmm.
I only have 8 things in my refrigerator.
Yeah.
You know, what do I do now? You know, I know Christopher. I've talked to him a few times online, and he's a guy that does the work to find answers. I love it when people do that. So he always has good questions. But I don't like to see people do a lot of the food allergy tests because you hear so many stories about they'll do one test, and on the same day they'll go to another lab and do another test, and they'll show completely different things.
Mm. Or if that's in your mind, you know, that's, you know, if it's like stuck in your mind that you're allergic to that, maybe, you know, if you hadn't known and you just started working on your digestion, it might have cleared up. But now you always think, oh, I'm allergic to this. I'm allergic to this. So I don't know. I'm just making this stuff up.
Every time you eat asparagus, you just start yelling at people.
Yeah. Because it's in your mind, you know. So I don't know.
Yeah. They could be a factor because our mind is powerful, more powerful than we think it is. Instead of doing those testing things, I like to see somebody, if they know a food is bothering them, I want them to eliminate it. And then I want to fix their digestion, and then they can try and put that in again later on and see how it does.
Chocolate. I can bring chocolate back in later on and see how.
You're bringing chocolate back?
I'm bringing chocolate back, baby. I've already brought sexy back. Might as well bring chocolate. You know?
Yeah, it's really all about, like, my focus is to raise the person's adaptive capacity. So the closer they get to those points of balance where their chemistry is really dialed, their pHs are where they should be, their breath rate's where it should be, their blood pressure's where it is, you'll just be a lot less sensitive to things as far as, like, not like you won't be able to feel how they make you feel, but you'll be a lot less thrown off by anything that you might consume.
Right. And in very severe cases, I may like to see somebody do some type of elimination diet where they're getting rid of all the processed junk in their food. And then the typical foods that are, or the foods that typically cause the most amount of problems, things like gluten or nightshade vegetables or nuts and things like that. And try to just eat nothing, you know, just eat real food and see if you feel okay as you start to fix your digestion. And if you do, then start adding things in. And if something makes your lips turn purple, then you know that that's giving you some trouble right now. But I only do that in severe cases. I find that with most people, if you just work on digestion, that things can turn around pretty quickly.
Well, could a problem be with so many people are allergic to things these days, the way it's grown, or, like, you know, things are processed, or there's, like, fertilizers or pesticides on there or something? I don't know.
You got fancy.
I had a good question. Oh, my gosh.
Staying clear.
I'm smart.
You know lots of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I think that the likelihood of eating something that just shouldn't be in you is way more common these days with foods that are genetically modified, that aren't labeled that, pesticides, weird chemicals, processing.
Yeah, like I might be allergic to a ding dong just because
there might be a weird chemical in it.
Exactly.
Right. And I think that that is always at least part of the problem with these people that are having a lot of food sensitivity issues, is that it has to be a lot of the just artificial chemicals and things that are, should not be in the body ever.
All right.
If you're a health, fitness, or nutrition professional, check out our other podcast, Six Figure Health Pro. We dig into the latest marketing techniques and business growing strategies for health professionals. To learn how to take your business to the next level, search for Six Figure Health Pro on iTunes or Stitcher, or go to sixfigurehealthpro.com to learn more. Now do what you're told.
Tracy, mustard. It's in everything and it makes me sick. I feel sad for Tracy because I love mustard. Love it.
That's how I feel about mayonnaise.
Ooh.
I don't feel that way about either of those things.
What about ketchup?
Ketchup can bring some good times around.
Or
I just found that unsweetened ketchup at Whole Foods. It's pretty yummy. I like it. But, you know, when you look at something, and a lot of times, oh, here comes the bee thing.
All right.
The ColecoVision-free bee story. Is that you know, when digestion is off for a person, if they're eating something a lot, they can really develop a major sensitivity to that, because now it just keeps coming back and the body's freaking out more every time. So it just becomes this huge battle every time you eat it. And when I was real sick and on all those meds and no digestion and PPI drugs, all that.
You couldn't eat bees at all?
I couldn't eat bees because I wanted to see. I was like, if I could catch that bee and eat it, at least I show that I could dominate something. And then I ate it, and that hurt a lot. And I can't eat them anymore, still today. No, but somebody got me on like bee pollen kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And I was doing all this bee pollen stuff over and over again. And I think I created like a sensitivity to it, because then even after I fixed my digestion, I was using some kind of lip balm because I like to be pretty.
Bird's bees.
It makes me pretty. And had bee stuff in it, and it would really make my lips all freaked out. So I stopped doing it, and then I was fine. I was wondering, you know, did I create some kind of bee sensitivity? I haven't been stung since then, but I'm wondering if I'm going to get freaked out.
We could go try it. I could conjure up some bees.
Okay. Do a little
bee
dance.
Bee charmer.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but speaking of condiments, ranch now. I could be on a deserted island, and if I had some ranch with me, I'd be good to go. I could just pour it on some leaves and just, you know.
Coconut chips with ranch?
Yeah. Or
that sounds delicious.
Dirt. Anything with ranch sounds better. Okay, John from Green, Ohio. Sorry, I grew up with grandparents who were farmers and users of butter and lard and flour. I turned out decent, besides my IBS, which is really stress-related due to my emotional connection with my musical duties. Educate me as to why gluten is so bad while I eat this amazing cheese-stuffed, thick-crusted pizza with meat and stuff. Okay, now he's just rubbing it in. John, why didn't you call me?
Uh-huh. So he's saying he deserves his stress-related IBS since he's not sharing the pizza?
Yeah.
So, I forgot. Oh, the question was about why is gluten so bad.
Yeah, what's up with gluten? All the cool kids. Yeah, everybody that's popular today is like, I'm gluten free.
I think it's a multi-layered conversation. Why don't you start wherever you want to start with it?
Well, I love gluten, but I
just drink it by the cupfuls.
You know, I do think that it goes back to what we were talking about earlier, where grains typically have more of these things we call lectins, and it requires healthier flora to eat larger amounts of that kind of stuff, because the flora will help bind to, and the mucus that the flora will help develop will bind to those lectins. And if you don't have that going on in your gut, it's gonna bother you.
Right. I need some carpet for my flora. Uh-huh.
Okay. You can edit in some canned laughter. Yeah.
And a lot of times, that's what
we're editing
need.
A joke. Right. Editing something funny there.
Nina, we need more canned laughter. We'll get old episodes of Three's Company or something and just patch those in. Mm-hmm. But, you know, look at sometimes those actual lectins or those proteins in the gluten can be a lot harder to break down into those nutrients as well. So if a person has their digestion working okay, but it's not, optimal, and so they can't break down everything, gluten could be one of those things that gets through a little easier than maybe a ding-dong might, or something like that. Also, when we talked to Rob Wolf, he researched a lot about how...
Name dropper.
He's so fancy. He, knows so much stuff. So, when you listen to him, it, hurts your brain, because you're like, man, I thought I knew some stuff. Mm-hmm. But then... You don't.
Yeah.
Anyways, so he says that in the same way that a porcupine has those little spiny prickly things to protect itself, that a lot of animals have other types of protection as well. And for skunks, they kind of stink, and I don't want to mess with that. But, even plant animals, and a lot of grains have this ability to interrupt the digestive lining and create irritation so that the animal doesn't eat that anymore. Mm. Like if we ate grain, if you just picked wheat from the field and just started eating it, you would hurl at that. You would not like that. Mm. So it's when we process it that it becomes consumable, but we might want to look at the fact that it was never meant to be consumed.
There's also why a lot of people maybe have a harder time with raw food diets, because the food isn't broken down as much, and they would think, oh, why am I so gassy when I eat all this salad or raw vegetables? Isn't that supposed to be healthy? But yeah, like you said, the plants have these natural defenses where they don't want to be digested. Some are even designed to survive the digestive process, so they, when they are excreted, they're in this really rich, fertile shit that they can grow in. Yeah.
Will got one.
Well, I meant it. I meant actual. It wasn't a cut. It was descriptive.
it was a trademark name that he wasn't allowed to say.
Yeah.
Medical term would be feces.
Fine.
Yeah. You know, one thing too, John, is John, you don't have to worry about us yelling at you because your parents made you eat butter and lard. That's actually not so bad. But I do want to tell you about your IBS that is stress induced, and let you know that I care for you deeply, John, and it's you need to look at other aspects of that, because a stress can be something that reduces the resources that your body have that could magnify IBS. But if you're dealing with IBS issues, you should listen to our IBS episode and get a full understanding that those things can be corrected so that even when you are under stress, the IBS won't affect you.
Mm. That was my favorite episode. Julie from Bonner's Ferry, Idaho. What do you think is contributing to the increase of celiac disease? I was told by Dr. Bickelson that we need gluten as it is actually helps strip the intestinal wall. Your thoughts on this? Is that a real name?
Dr. Bickelson, yeah. He's a good guy. He knows a lot of stuff. He does a lot of microscope work and teaches doctors all over the world. But he's fancy.
Nice. He just got a plug.
Yeah, he did get a plug. Wow. That's good stuff. I think that the reason that it's celiac disease is the gluten issue. And it's increasing so much. And I think there could be quite a few different reasons. One is that people finally understand what the problem is. Before, they were a little bit bitchy, and they just complained a lot. And now we understand that, there's something that's really giving them a hard time and making them feel lousy. Mm-hmm. So that could be one aspect.
I really just want to walk into Whole Foods and be like, where can I get a glass of gluten? Where? I need a full glass of gluten.
I need a shot of gluten. Uh-huh. Those green shots. But some people say it's because there's so much more wheat in the products that we're having. That could be a factor. I kind of think that it also has to do with the fact that so many women don't breastfeed their kids or for as long. Mm. And there's a lot of theories that kind of feel like, I'm not blaming women for this. Yeah, that's not what it is.
Oh, I was going to say.
I'll turn it around. I'm going to blame
your boob.
No, we'll get back to it. I'll end up blaming the doctor that tells the woman, use this soy formula instead. It's no big deal. It's the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the doctors are telling these women, and that's why they're misguided. But, there's a lot of information out there that indicates that the breast milk is so important for developing the gut flora and all that immune system, as well as a lot of things the body needs to develop digestion. So if a baby's not being breastfed long enough and allowing those things to develop, then do you want to talk about how, digestion could just end up worse?
Yeah, well, one thing that you can see is like when people have weak digestion to begin with, they can't get a lot of nutrition from their food that they're eating, and they end up perpetuating, making the problems worse and worse. Like they don't have the resources to run their metabolism and their blood pressures low. They're not going to have the resources to have powerful digestion, and that's going to perpetuate the problem of not getting enough nutrition from their food and just lead to these long-term, really chronic problems. So if you have like a lousy start when you're a kid and you're eating all this food that's filled with crazy chemicals and depleted of nutrition because the soils are depleted, and you had some weird alternative, didn't have breast milk and had some weird formula,
right?
It's gonna be really hard for everything to be working right.
Well, if you're like a woman and you're totally depleted anyway, so you have like low blood pressure and you're electrolyte deficient and all that, like isn't breastfeeding gonna make you even more of those things if you've got this like kid just sucking the life right out of you, literally?
Mm-hmm. I think it's less than when the baby is actually in you and you're like, you're at the gas station all the time, because the body will turn off that ability, the lactating function once you stop. I think it takes a little bit and then it just kind of turns itself off. I don't think that's as depleting as when the baby's inside you. And I certainly don't feel that it's enough of an issue to make that part of the decision to stop breastfeeding. And, today... it's so widely publicized that the formulas are just as good as breast milk, don't worry about it, that to a new mother that loves their baby tremendously, but they're told it's not going to make a difference. So if your nipples are bleeding and it's making you miserable or it's not working for you, then it's fine to stop and do this. But the reality is that the breast milk is like magic. It's like the best stuff that there is. There's a reason that guys like boobs so much. They remember that. That's where all that came from, that everything that built us up into being a functional human, that's where it started out as. So if you have a newborn, do whatever you can to breastfeed. It doesn't have to be 16 or anything, but do it for long enough to allow the kid to develop.
I've seen some people breastfeeding their kid and their kids have teeth. I'm like, no, let's don't. Come on. No.
Right. So I'm not saying that, but... There's a lot of information coming about that is pointing to the fact that there are situations that can come about if a person isn't breastfed correctly or long enough. Do you have thoughts on that, Will?
That's my favorite supplement to this day. It's really nourishing.
Yeah.
No, I do
you
think that
pregnant women. So.
Yeah, well.
It is the thing now where a lot of people are drinking breast milk as
that's
an adult.
That's disgusting.
No, well, they're sick and just the nutrients that come in. And there's a lot of data showing how beneficial it can be.
I mean, it makes a lot more sense than drinking cow milk.
Yeah, it really does because it's a person.
Well, but I was listening today about raw cow milk and that's considered really good for you. If it's raw and...
Yeah, and the good
whole,
it's a good cow.
And it's a grass-fed cow.
It could be, but it's still, it's not, you're not a cow. You're a person, and that's
people
why.
People call me that a lot, though. No,
they're wrong. They're mistaken.
Yeah.
But, and we've talked a little bit about that, not on air, but just in general with goat's milk maybe being a better choice because the size of the proteins are
sure.
a lot more similar to the human's proteins. So if you are drinking dairy, you might want to go with goat milk instead.
And don't think that we're saying that if you're sick, you need to go find a pregnant woman and ask her for something to drink. That's not what we're saying at all. But if you understand that data is showing that it is helping very sick people improve their health, then it magnifies the understanding of how important it is to that little baby. Mm. So that's one possible situation that could be contributing to the increase in celiac, but I'm not saying that it is.
I had a teacher in college, and she drank her own urine because her allergies were so bad, and she had a doctor tell her that's what she should do. So every time she came to class, I was always scared what was in her thermos.
I've actually heard really good things about that being potentially helpful.
Urine therapy, yeah. I'm not saying do that, but there is some. I've read some books about it. It was just interesting to see that. And that's a whole different show. Yeah. So let's well, I find that there are crazy things out there that people find that work. Mm-hmm. But what we find is that if you just correct digestion so that your body can get what it needs and then balance your body so it can function correctly, that you don't need to drink pee or find a pregnant woman to give you milk. You can just be a normal
but
human.
But I always wonder how these people like thought that in the first place. Oh, I'm going to drink this pee and see what it does.
Yeah. Who's the first guy that did that?
All right, Amy, have you ever heard that if someone is allergic to latex, they should not eat bananas and avocados? Also allergic to soy and iodine, and soy is in everything.
I've never heard that. Have you ever heard that?
That would suck to the latex. I have a lot of comments I could be making right now, but I'm not gonna.
Although there are some really interesting things to look at when we look at soy and other omegas, so-called essential fatty acids. We can look up the work of Ray Pete, as well as this other really great chiropractor named Guy Shankar. And they have some excellent articles that talk about how these omega-3s and 6s, which everyone's saying are super important and really essential, are actually like go rancid in the body, whether they're like super molecularly
organic,
distilled.
Right,
doesn't matter how pure it is when you eat it. It's what our body does to it. And those like polyunsaturated fatty acids are actually really harmful. And that's probably a super controversial thing to say, that these essential fatty acids are really toxic for pretty much everybody, but that's what my God.
That's what we're here. Controversy. Stir it up. Get those people talking.
Well, we do know for sure that a lot of people that are taking fatty acids are already too catabolic and have no business taking those extra fatty acids at all. But, you know, when we look at Amy with soy, man, that's a real problem one for a lot of people, almost as common as gluten, I bet. It's just one of those things that a lot of people are sensitive to when digestion is not taking care of it.
Mm-hmm. I hear everybody's always eating soy and tofu and soy.
Mm. That was kind of a while ago. People are kind of getting away from that now.
Oh, well, where have I been?
Maybe you didn't pay attention.
They're like advertising
soy-free. Get back up
on
my trends.
But then also, like with the iodine thing, again, that definition of a toxin, anything your body can't overcome or utilize. And iodine is a really important essential nutrient to have. But if your pHs are off, you're not going to absorb it, and it's going to do weird things in your body.
Right.
So you can be sensitive to it even if you need it, you know. You just have to dial your chemistry so you can use it.
Hmm. Ross, I get a cold sore anytime I eat tomatoes. Don't eat tomatoes, Ross.
See, Ken is here to help
people. Solving problems left and right today.
That's taken done. Next.
Done.
No, but I will say that with Ross, that may not be a food allergy, so to speak. It could be because tomatoes do have the ability, nightshade-y kind of situation. But tomatoes will also pull calcium out of the tissues and hold it in the bloodstream in the same way that sugar or vitamin D can. Not as strong, but it still can do it. So we... What show did we talk about cold sores? And I can't even remember. I don't think we really focused on it.
That was the cold sore show.
No, it was colds.
Yeah, it was like common cold, right? Yeah.
Right. So listen, go to iTunes and look for Kick It Naturally, or we're on Stitcher now too if you have Android stuff. But listen to the common cold, and it'll help you understand that when that cold sores can flare up when you don't have the right amount of calcium at the tissue level.
Mm-hmm. Cool. And I would also say to Ross that Rachel may not be the one for you.
She may not.
Just so you know. Sherry from Fort Mill, South Carolina. Can you discuss chronic urticaria? Urticaria.
Yeah.
Ah, I practiced on it too. Darn it, let me go back. Can you discuss chronic urticaria? My son has this, and we have been to every specialist, and all they say is for him to take Zyrtec. My son says this doesn't help him, and he has to wear sweatshirts to school because he's embarrassed by the red splotches. He has a widespread rash 24/7.
And that's horrible. You know, you don't want to be doing that.
Especially with kids these days. They're mean.
Right. So let's cover this a little bit, but I don't view this as a food sensitivity. I view it as probably something bigger than that. And I think Sherry should listen to our episode on acne and freaky skin issues, is what it was called, or something like that. But you might want to look at what's going on with your son with his stool. And maybe, I don't know how old he is. Should it say how old he is?
Mm-mm.
Okay, so, but that's something to look at, because when the body is taking in food, and like Will was saying, if it's not being digested, it becomes a toxin to the body. So now the body needs to get rid of this. It becomes a problem the body has to deal with. So if a person's constipated and they're not pooping, or bile is not flowing so that toxins can't be removed, now the body's freaking out and it does anything it can to get the toxins out. Do you want to talk about how it can use the skin? And
yeah, the blood has to stay as pure as possible. So your body will shove those toxins elsewhere if it can't eliminate them the way it wants to through the bile. Sometimes it'll go into the fat cells, so that toxicity can make you fat. Or sometimes your body will excrete it through your skin, because that's a really available filter organ, you know, and that's when we'll get these weird, like, acne and itches and rashes and such.
Right. So that is just the skin clogging up or being irritated by the body trying to remove all this stuff. And it happens a lot, especially if someone can't emulsify fats correctly and they're still eating the foods they're eating contain fats, those really become toxic and cause a lot of skin issues. Another practitioner that I work with, he had this kid with, it sounds like it's almost the exact same situation. But the little girl was, I think she was 6 or 7, and it was causing other issues too, beyond just the skin issue. And the mom had to sleep next to this kid with an EpiPen. Mm. And the doctor was like, if the kid stops breathing, you have to stab him with this EpiPen keep it alive. Mm. And the mom was freaking out. And this poor kid, you know, was dealing with all this.
Mom might stab you in the middle
of
the night.
Yeah. Yeah. Good night, mommy. Yeah. I mean, that wire hangers chick is nothing compared to this lady having to do this with her kid. And it turned out that the kid was not pooping at all, like maybe once a week or something like that. And so we're supposed to poop. That's where the toxins go. So all these toxins were backing up in the kid. They were pushed out through the skin, creating this rash and all these other issues, almost getting the kid stabbed by the mom. My friend ended up helping the kid be able to poop, fix the constipation issues, and it totally went away.
You know, they should have like mandatory classes on this stuff in elementary school, like teach you what good poop looks like, how often you're supposed to, teach you about imbalances. I mean, they just need to be teaching this.
Yeah. We see a lot of reviews on Amazon for the book that are like, how come high school kids don't know this stuff?
Or I would say start earlier. So these kids, you know, once they're able to understand some of this stuff, like start teaching it so that we can start preventing things early on.
Right. It's a good idea.
I should be president.
You got like 17 good ideas on this show. Wow. Right, Kenna? What's up?
I don't know. Maybe my blood pressure's good today. Amber from Clare, Michigan. So I've noticed since eating public school lunches, I get headaches and am lethargic the rest of the day. Would that be because it's a non-food, allergy, or noise level of the 15 preschoolers in the room?
Yeah.
I'd say the 15 preschoolers, right, and probably processed.
I really liked your voice for Amber.
Oh, I know. Thanks, yeah.
I like how Amber has a different voice every time she has a question.
Yeah. We actually tweeted back and forth with Amber a bit this past week about her frustration with the public school lunches and stuff like that. And it would be awesome to reform that. And some of the private charter schools and stuff do have healthy options, which is rad.
And they're working on legislature and stuff, too, to get better food in schools and things like that as well.
And it takes a while. It's slow, it's slow. But they do have the idea. But, I would say that it's probably not an allergy. It's just that you knew that Amber felt lousy before when she was eating bad food, and then she started eating well and improved. But now she was telling us on Twitter that her boss, is the principal of the school, is forcing the teachers to eat school lunch to show the kids how to eat lunch. And I was like, well, to fix the problem, just tell your boss that there's a documentary filmmaker that wants to interview him about how he's forcing his teachers to eat bad food, and it should take care of the problem.
I had a thought and then it disappeared.
Oh, that's not going to be the last time.
I don't
like
that. Ashley from Cordova, Alabama. Peanut and other tree nut allergies are becoming more and more prevalent. Any thoughts on what that might be?
Do you, Will?
Well, I mean, I think we've covered already like the distinction between like super real peanut allergies versus like some of these other just digestive
sensitivity.
Where nuts in particular are very resistant to being digested. And a lot of times we can help fix that if you soak your nuts before, like, I saw it, PG. So, but yeah, putting your nuts in water overnight in the fridge can help fool the nuts into sprouting so that they break down some of these digestive enzyme inhibitors.
Well, I have a tub you can soak your nuts in.
Thank you.
I'm a good friend.
That'll be very helpful.
But don't view that as the same thing. If you have a peanut allergy, it's just a much more serious situation where the solution for a peanut allergy, where if you eat them that you die, is just you don't eat those. And I think that's, I mean, you're not missing that much. There's other stuff.
The nuts are really good.
But there's other things that are delicious that are better than dying.
Yeah, I guess so. Right. I remembered what I was going to say. Y'all remember Sloppy Joes?
I love those.
At school?
Yeah.
We would have Sloppy Joes, and I was the fat kid, and I'd always like trade another Sloppy Joe for like my fruit or something.
I remember I had this one. I got a free chocolate shake because I worked behind the counter, and I couldn't finish it because I ran out of time to, like, because I was serving everybody. I took it home, refroze it, or put it in my fridge, and I drank it that night, and I threw up. And then it said, like, on the shake container, I read it later, I was like, it says, do not refreeze. I'm like, what kind of, like, milkshake cannot tolerate being cold twice? Like, what chemically happened?
But did you keep this in your locker or something all day and then freeze it again?
I think I kept it in the school fridge, came back later, so it couldn't survive, like, the trip home. And then,
you thought about it all day, too.
What's in that to make it, like...
I don't have a turbo answer for that.
Yeah, it's crazy.
You know what else that we totally missed on, though, is enzymes. And a lot of people's food sensitivities, especially like, you know, lactose intolerant people, sometimes the issue, or at least a contributing factor, is that the person is missing the enzyme needed to break down that type of food.
Mm-hmm.
So if they're missing lactase and they're eating cheese, they can have a hard time with that.
Yeah, and that brings up another little quick tidbit about, a lot of times we've talked about the health of the flora being important, and there's all sorts of different probiotic supplements out there, and we might want to just briefly mention there's a difference between the kind of bacteria that should be in the gut and the kind that shouldn't, and there's this weird distinction you can Google if you want to look it up between left spin and right spin lactic acid, and the right kind of lactic acid is the kind that you want in your body, is the kind that like your muscles produce when you work out. And there's certain bacterial strains that produce that kind of lactic acid, like L. salivarius is like a good one. But a lot of the times, many of the probiotic supplements that people are taking are creating the wrong kind of lactic acid, which can make problems worse.
Right, for some people, yeah. Especially if some imbalances occur. Sometimes when using enzyme supplements that a person can do okay on dairy or whatever enzyme that they're missing. So that is something that people can try. Mm. So let's look at what we learned. I think we might have learned some stuff. Most of the stuff we learned today was from Kenna.
Yeah.
Really, she was smart. Cranking them out. Yeah.
I don't know anything, actually. Just fake it.
But I think the first thing to look at, if you feel like you have a food sensitivity, is look at your digestion and see, are there issues that are going on? One interesting fact that if you look up like celiac disease and stuff like that, or some of these other food allergies, a lot of the symptoms that they list are abdominal pain, bloating, gas, diarrhea, constipation, nausea, and fatigue. And that's all the stuff that we see happen when somebody's digestion isn't working correctly.
That just sounds like a regular old Saturday night for me.
So it kind of makes sense that with what we're saying, that if the symptoms that come along with celiac disease or other food sensitivities are the same symptoms that we see when someone's digestion isn't working right, then you kind of see, okay, it makes some sense.
Yeah, don't let the disease diagnosis stop your thinking.
Right. I think that's important. So look at digestion, see if there are things that you can do to improve your digestion. And then, though you may need to stay away from the food that was bothering you for a while, know that you can eventually try to put it back in and see if you still have a problem with it. Because once digestion is working, you should be able to do a little bit better.
And if you've been listening to any of these podcasts, then you're starting to see that there's like a pattern. It's all about digestion.
A lot of things. Everything straight out digestion.
Digestion. So just fix that and the earth will open up for you and the skies and the heavens.
You'll get a higher paying job, all the stuff. Yeah,
everything.
Chicks will flock to you.
You'll have a crown of gold for you in
all that
heaven.
Stuff. So it is a big deal, and especially with this topic, it's like the main thing. So, but you can learn how to do that on our free course on kickitinthenuts.com. Mm-hmm.
So if you want to learn more about how to look at your own chemistry, you can read any of Tony's books or take the free 4-week digestion course at Kick It in the Nuts.
And where's your new site, your new blog,
Will,
people can find you?
I'm putting up lots of fun info on mybodyofknowledge.net.
Mybodyofknowledge.net.
Indeed.
All right. Okay, people, until next time.
Let's end the show without saying goodbye or anything. It just stops.